Thanks to genetic engineering, a specific effect could be obtained in a very short period of time over broad population groups. The production of millions and billions of human brain genes is in part already possible and will no longer be a problem. We cannot be sure that we don't already eat or breathe in such genes from certain giant food monopoly products. In any case, we will be flooded with genetically altered products. New medical products have to overcome certain hurdles first before they can be marketed. The effects of prescription medicines are under the supervision of doctors who also take a certain responsibility for this. Where are the safety regulations for genetically altered nutritional products? Who controls them? Who takes responsibility for them? Next headline is, animals are the first victims. Genetic engineering wants to change our entire world, the earth and everything on it. This process has already begun. Domestic animals are being increasingly manipulated so that they can function as bioreactors. Cows, rabbits, pigs and sheep artico produce drugs in their milk or in their flesh, a process that is called gene farming. It is assumed that maybe 10 transgenic cows are sufficient to produce enough insulin to cover the worldwide demand of diabetics. In general, there is a danger that through the use of genetic engineering, monopolies could come into existence for the production of pharmaceutical products. Experience shows that it is usually one company that wins the race and then obtains a patent for the discovered procedure, thus remaining the sole supplier of the genetically created product for a number of years or decades. This will of course please those who are doing an enormous business with their patented invention, at the cost of people who depend on such a product. And let us not forget the animals who have to suffer for this purpose. An animal friend must ask himself how such an animal feels, being misused in a way that is foreign to its nature. Television films about animal experiments at, for example, the well-known Swiss Technical University, ETH, in Zurich, show that these animals suffer a great deal. They are sick. They are so damaged that often they cannot even walk normally. Observing such animals, we sense that their entire life is nothing but suffering. They are not allowed to be themselves, because they have to carry out biological functions which are abnormal to their species. What unimaginable affliction this must mean for the soul of the animal, because, yes, animals, too, have souls. One thing should be clear by now: if those who cause all this call themselves Christians, they are nothing less than liars and hypocrites. People interfere in God's creation, abuse the animals and allow them to suffer, having no idea what they are doing to themselves. For God's law says, "You will reap what you sow." This means that what we have perpetrated on the animals is what we will reap. This will be experienced on the bodies of those who continue with these heinous deeds, and to a certain extent by those who see it and remain silent, for those who keep silent are, in part, also guilty. Next headline is, quote, a patent guarantees sole rights to profit from an invention. An informational sheet prepared by the Greens, a European political party, for the European Parliament explains the consequences of a patent. A patent is a contract between an inventor and society. When an inventor has made public his invention, society guarantees him the sole rights to profit from the invention for a certain time, normally 17 to 20 years. The invention has to be something new in order to be patentable. It cannot be considered self-evident by appropriate experts and must be commercially viable. It is very interesting to note how the interpretation of the laws governing the patenting of animals and plants has changed. The European Patent Agreements of 1977 expressly excluded patents for animal and plant species. However, the European courts have changed their legal opinions, because the United States has decided that anything is patentable, including genes. In 1987, the US Patent and Trademark Office made the crucial and disturbing announcement that all forms of animals on Earth, with the exception of Homo sapiens, should be considered patentable subject matter. All life, proclaimed the patent officials, can now properly be regarded as a manufacture or composition of matter. Animals, human cells, animal cells, all of life is patentable. In this way, all life can be exploited commercially. Since then, patents have been granted for animals, and it is no longer a large step towards patenting human beings, because once the judicial barriers have fallen, this trend in development will continue. This is what often happens. And certainly there is no talk about the dignity of human life. Legally speaking, this would indicate that the owner of a patent has access to, and monopoly of, people who have been manipulated by him. Small signs point in this direction. The well-known American brain researcher, Craig Venter, applied for a patent for more than 2,000 human brain genes. This means that with these patents, this scientist wants nothing else than the sole right to use and to reap the economic benefits from more than 2,000 human brain genes. Here is another quote from the informational sheet of the Greens in the European Parliament. The Common Market Commission for Patent Rights suggests the following: living materials shall be patentable in Europe. In hindsight, we can say that it is not just simply the material that is being patented, but also the consequences of this interference in the lives of animals and humans. This means that the life of all people on this earth is actively being influenced by industrial monopolies, perhaps even by governments. It is remarkable that it is not mandatory to label genetically engineered products. We all have to take in food and drink, we are all consumers. But normally we do not know if we have a naturally grown, organically raised food in front of us or one that has been genetically manipulated. No one of us knows if we have not already taken in some material that can cause genetic alterations in our body or brain. What is it that we can do in order to change what can still be changed? We should act as long we can still think for ourselves and make our own decisions. In the end, the sole answer is found in the evolution of our consciousness by living in accordance with the divine laws. But it seems as though man has the need to improve on God's creation so that it better fits his requirements. Let's continue to look at how animals are planned to be altered so that they suit humans' needs. There exist, for example, genetically improved giant pigs, living mounds of flesh, so that the demand for meat can be satisfied. There are also rabbits which produce interleukin, a drug that improves the human immune system. In this way, animals are manipulated to the liking of man without consideration for the nature of the animal. Everything must be subject to the human will. From many tests, we know that the consumption of too much meat causes many illnesses, for example, metabolic diseases or cancer. Excessive consumption of meat, particularly in the Western world, could thus be considered dangerous. When we eat animals that have been produced by genetic engineering, we add the extra danger of consuming gene fragments. The point is, we have no idea how these fragments will react in our intestines. Possibly the human intestinal flora will be changed. After all, the E. coli bacteria seem to be the favorite experimental objects of scientists. Sheep in Australia that have been genetically manipulated produce wool which falls off by itself when the time for shearing approaches. The wool practically falls off their backs and is caught in nets. There is no need to shear. Besides that, these animals are capable of producing agents in their wool which deter insects. What you get is a wool which is perfect and ready for further processing. Other sheep produce colored wool. We can see the principle at work here. Ignoring all ethical and moral considerations, the animals are so changed as to bring the greatest economic benefit. In growing cocoa beans, a gene can now be introduced that produces a plant sweetener. In the future, there will be no need to add sugar to chocolate. But allergies and eczema could be a part of the consequences. A remarkable potential for the production of flavor has been found in many types of mushrooms. And genes for the flavors of peach, nougat, cherry, marzipan and coconut have been isolated and await their practical application as genetically engineered flavor enhancers. Scientists at Monsanto have developed the first transgenic wheat plants. The biolistic procedure used here was a gene gun which bombards the cells with foreign gene particles. With this, the third most important grain worldwide, after corn and rice, has now been genetically manipulated. JID, August 1992. seeds of well-known, long-standing grains will soon no longer be available on the market, the production of such grains may very well be forbidden. In this way, another monopoly will develop which will make every human being dependent. The Berlin Institute for Genetic Biological Research is planning experiments out in the open with gene-manipulated potatoes. There are two types of potatoes involved that have already been tested in the greenhouses. One of the transgenic types produces extremely large potatoes, the other contains only one starch component, amylopectin, to process the starch. Naturally grown potatoes contain two starch components, amylopectin, and amylase. Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, September 9, 1992. An American group has succeeded in inserting the gene of a certain bacteria into the gene of the experimental plant Arabidopsis thaliana. This plant now produces the components of a certain synthetic. Scientists maintain that this is a promising new route in the production of synthetics. Atildrust Zeitung, Physicians Journal, May 21, 1992. Until 1992, more than 500 genetically altered organisms had been planted out in the open worldwide. This was reported by experts at the annual convention of the German Botanical Society in Berlin. Gene-manipulated plants on a massive scale were transplanted onto thousands of acres of land in China, Ludwigsburger Kreis Zeitung, Sept.16, 1992. How much more has been done since then? We should become aware of what is really taking place and what the far-reaching consequences of such events can be. For this reason, we raise the questions about the consequences for every single one of us and for humanity as a whole, but also about the motivation of those who carry out this work. Human interference is already carried out in the production of food. For example, the use of antibiotics, beta blockers and tranquilizers in animal husbandry, have already brought about disastrous results for mankind. The numbers of people allergic to foodstuffs is rising explosively. There are patients who can digest only one kind of grain and one kind of plant, and nothing else. In retrospect, we can conclude that in the fight between food on the one hand and intestinal flora on the other, much has already occurred that we cannot yet understand. Genetic interference in organisms can create unknown, new substances. An example is the sleeping pill tryptophan. In the USA, negative side effects arose as a result of its use. 5,000 people became chronically ill and 27 died, as a result of the use of a genetically optimized bacteria strain which produced impurities in the manufacture of this medication in Japan. Because of the severity and breadth of the repercussions, one could call this a disaster. The direction of future developments can clearly be seen and is well known, yet scientists do not intervene, and governments do not consider it necessary to help. The apostles of morals in this world keep silent. Do they have good reason? Can it be that they count on the fact that people react only briefly to horrifying reports? These impressions last only a few hours or days before being covered over by even more bad news. In any case, could it be that this bad news can no longer be properly absorbed, mentally and emotionally, having exceeded the capacity of the human psyche? As we have stated before, science operates by the treatment of symptoms. Science tries to fill in the holes brought about by mankind's wrongdoing. And since the law of God is not considered worthy of attention, one's conscience is calmed by saying that the end justifies the means. The devil will be driven out by Beelzebub, so to speak. No one gets to the root of the causes, no one tries to understand human wrongdoing, no one asks how these circumstances came about. Solutions are being found for many problems, yet they remain transparently superficial, and the search for causes and deeper reasons is forgotten. At the same time, it is clear, and to the scientists who have more insight, it should be even more apparent, that some things which have been started by the sorcerer's apprentice can no longer be controlled. One example is nuclear technology, which is out of control. Doctors are anxiously looking at the increase in allergic reactions of children, and the increase in childhood leukemia. But for those who thoroughly preoccupy themselves with this problem, a foreboding sense of evil becomes more and more a certainty. There is a method behind all this madness, this absurdity. Can we sense where all this is leading to? The worst that the powerful could fear is an autonomous, self-confident, healthy and thus critical citizenry. A nation that is wretched and wasting away will hardly rise up. When people are not used to first looking for the cause within themselves and rectifying it, then the worse they feel, the louder they will call for a strong man who resorts to drastic measures, which means restoring order with force. The people will bow to his dictates, and without any difficulty slip into a new world order. Once the effects are there, the wheel in motion can hardly be reversed. For this reason, before it is totally too late, we should become aware of the dangers of genetic engineering. Next headline is, more examples of genetic engineering and modern molecular genetics in our daily lives. The person who goes through this world with open eyes and ears knows what's happening in the world. The one who reads the newspapers and listens to the radio also knows where mankind stands. A few brief items that everyone can read in the newspaper: the February 1992 issue of Genetic Information Service reported on a genetically engineered laundry detergent. The company, Solvay Enzymes, received permission in November 1991 to manufacture enzymes using genetic engineering methods. Enzymes are catalysts which influence the chemical alteration of substances. Such enzymes are added to the detergent as spot removers, for example. And so, we come in contact with genetic engineering even in our clothing. In the same journal, we read that the USA gave permission for the unlimited commercial use of a type of transgenic cotton. This means that we are increasingly coming into contact with genetically manipulated cotton. The danger doesn't come just from drugs, water and food, but from our clothing, too. Now we have natural clothing which is anything but natural, it is becoming ever more genetically manipulated. The Saar 1/4 Dutch Zeitung of February 27, 1992 talked about the chemical treatment of natural fibers. The author summarizes at the end, it is probable that the ecological balance for this method of cotton production and processing is more unfavorable than that of synthetic fibers. Seen in this way, synthetic fibers will be more natural than cotton. In the September 1990 issue of Nature, we find, also those who wear primarily healthy, natural cloth are no longer free from this risk. Every fourth silk sample and every tenth cotton sample tested at the Freiburg Hydrotox Lab indicated questionable reactions, pointing to the possibility that the fibers of these clothes had been genetically altered. That was at the beginning of the 1990s. How is it today, in 1996? Stern magazine of November 1992 reported a gene test for employment. Many employers give genetic tests before hiring someone, so that the employer knows if the applicant is predisposed towards a future disease. Will we soon have the transparent employee? Soon it could be that genetically tested employees will, according to warnings from the labor unions, have to be physically and mentally ready for the Olympics in order to find a job at all. There are other problems to consider in this line of reasoning. There will be issues of information control and privacy. Employers, insurance companies, the military, and the government, among others, will want to have access to the information contained in our genome. Scientists may want such information restricted, but they will certainly have little influence over its use, as they had little influence over the use of the atomic bomb. Routine genetic screening will be easy to justify under current law, which already mandates newborn screening in most states. For example, in many settings. Although we are utterly unprepared to deal with issues of mandatory screening, confidentiality, privacy, and discrimination, we will likely tell ourselves that we have already dealt with them, and so the genome project poses no threat there. Next headline is, genetic engineering a totalitarian birth control? The first 3 months in the life of an embryo are increasingly dangerous. It is just a matter of time until genetic examinations, for instance, of the amniotic fluid, become routine in Europe, too, through which damaged genes can be recognized in the embryo. It is already being considered whether in such cases the mother should be legally forced to abort, or whether she is free to decide for an abortion. The United States has always been the forerunner in new developments. There, scientists already maintain that the woman who bears a damaged infant is committing a crime. The health insurance companies reacted to this and will not pay when a mother bears a genetically damaged infant. The word genetically damaged reminds us of the Nazis, when worthless lives were destroyed under the heading of eugenics or euthanasia. But there are other examples, perhaps less spectacular, but of no less extreme attitude, for instance, in the forced sterilization measures taken in the earlier part of this century in the United States. Before running its course, the early eugenics movement imprinted its image directly on state and federal laws. Many states adopted sterilization statutes, and the U.S. Congress passed a new immigration law in the 1920s based on eugenics doctrine. In the years that followed, thousands of American citizens were sterilized so that they could not pass on their inferior traits, and the federal government locked its doors to certain immigration groups deemed biologically unfit by then existing eugenics standards. Who decides what changes in the genetic makeup can be classified as damaged? Could it be that in this way, under the heading of genetic damage, one could easily induce a method of selection, carried out, for example, by departments of health, hospitals, etc.? The information would then be collected and registered by computer. Which gene combination will then be declared worthy of life? It is only a question of time before genetic testing during pregnancy becomes compulsory. A new kind of eugenics requires abortion when genetic damage has been proven. Hitler's dream of a healthy race of human beings is finding its belated realization. Jesus said, "What you do unto the least of your brothers, you do to me." This is also true for the developing fetus in the mother's womb. But it doesn't stop there. Powerful technologies do not just change what human beings can do, they change the very way we think, especially about ourselves. As one example, the ability to completely screen embryos could lead to a market in high-grade embryos that could be bought and sold. This could lead not only to putting a specific price on all human characteristics, such as height, intelligence, race, eye color, etc., but also to viewing children as commodities that have no rights or interests of their own, but that exist to further the interests of parents and future societies. A map of the human genome could also lead to a more narrowly focused view of a normal gene complement, and how much deviation we permit before considering any individual genome abnormal, deviant, or diseased. We haven't seriously begun to think about how to think about this issue, even though we know normalcy will be invented, not discovered. And in considering these questions, we cannot forget that there are other factors that play a role in the definition of what is normal or abnormal, or what is the cause of an illness. We can read, for example, the new tests that promote genetic explanations of disease have limited applicability and benefits. Multiple factors modify the experience of ill health for the individual in our society. Non-genetic factors such as quality of housing, income, availability of health insurance, employment status and education are usually more important to the ability to cope with infirmity and flourish than are one's genes. To study the complexity of human emotion and behavior, along with psychiatric illness, will always reveal the limited role of genetic effects on life experience. So what is this all about? Is a standard version of a human being on the horizon, one who is allowed to live because his genetic makeup exhibits certain identifiable characteristics? Would it not be possible to obtain a conformity of the masses to satisfy the aspirations and goals of the rulers? Next headline is, Specific Dangers Through Gene-Manipulated Bacteria. Even though there are relatively few voices which warn that we are no longer in a position to control what has been set free, a review of recent history could teach us a thing or two. When in the beginning of the 60s the nuclear economy really got going, some scientists calmed the fears of the population. It was said that federal laws existed which now regulated the use of the new technology, the atom. Just as in those days, industrial companies are sending scientists and experts out today to appease the public by showing them the harmlessness of this new technology, of genetic engineering, in a scientific way. Using the example of nuclear industry, we can see that this is often nothing more than shadow boxing. Today's newspaper headlines tell us that worldwide nuclear waste accumulated since 1960 has become an unsolvable problem. The Hamburger Abendblatt of February 1992 reported, "Nuclear alarm in the North Sea." Over the past 20 years, the Soviet Union has simply dumped its nuclear waste into the ocean north of Europe, Barents Sea and Kara Sea, near the island of Nova Zembla. The paper reported, "Danger for millions of years." Not even minimal safety precautions are being taken by the Soviet Union in handling this radioactive material. Experts estimate that the major part of the nuclear waste was dumped prior to 1983. This means that mankind will have to live with these dangers for another million years. We have to expect the same and similar things in dealing with genetic engineering, because at this point we are still in its pioneering phase. The supporters of genetic engineering have emphasized again and again the harmlessness of genetic experiments. The Technical Supervision Society of Southwest Germany has opened a genetic engineering laboratory. An item in the Main Post August 8, 1992, with this entry a nationwide unique into the area of biological safety, the Southwest German TAF will support not only the pharmaceutical branches of biotechnical industrial concerns but also agribusiness and food processing sectors. It will provide risk analyses for official licensing procedures, as well as support the government with the legally prescribed supervision of genetic laboratories or production installations. In over 20 years of discussion about the safety standards of genetic engineering, no profound unexpected or new types of dangers have emerged. This interpretation was given by TAF advisor Werner Frommer. At the same time, this professor stressed, "We cannot gain genetic engineering at zero risk." According to the opinion of the German federal government, in the end, an indefinable risk has to be accepted in the release of genetically manipulated organisms into the natural environment. Meanwhile, numerous research results point to a manipulated genetic makeup that is not only spreading, but robustly establishing itself in soil organisms as well. The Bethel Institute in Frankfurt discovered that it is quite possible to transfer manipulated genes to the natural microflora. A few years ago, it was proven that genes in manipulated microorganisms were transmitted in sewage plant sludge. In an interview with the head of the Molecular Biology Center in the Federal Institute for Nutrition, a reported in the Munich Medical Weekly number 3692, a professor K.D. Jani was the first to admit that an antibiotic-resistant gene of a manipulated microorganism can be transmitted to the human intestinal flora, stating it was charlatanism to declare genetic engineering as totally harmless. The G.A. Tilda Pilkroetingertagblatt of July 31, 1992 reported that in former East Germany in the area of Magdeburg, artificially altered bacteria have been released into the open in large amounts for years. The genetically altered original strains were given to the distilleries solely for the production of alcohol. Because of costs, the altered biomass was later simply dumped into the open. The altered bacteria strain that had been released had a limited survival. After 5 days it could not be detected in the soil or the river water. However, the bacteria strain could still be found in small numbers on leaves of grass for a few weeks. A parliamentary question was raised and the federal government answered that the original strain, or the product itself, could be a potential risk for humans. The New Scientist reports that in the Netherlands, scientists have discovered that genetically altered E. coli bacteria reached the canals from laundries that clean lab coats. Until now, it has been assumed that the most experimentally used E. coli strain K12 survives only in lab cultures. Environmental researchers have discovered that E. coli bacteria thrive on damp lab coats, and even when these are dry again, the coli survive. When the lab coats are soaked in about 35 degrees Celsius water, the germs are released and make their way unimpeded into the effluents. It was further discovered that it is possible for the bacteria to work its way through the lab coat and in this way contaminate the clothing worn beneath.